Welcome to Star Wars Lore with Idiots, the show where we explore the vast and complex universe of lightsabers, blasters, and the Force. Yet somehow, we manage to find humor in the fact that even with all of these powerful tools at their disposal, some characters still rely on something as simple as a stick.
And hello, and welcome back to another Reality Skewed Gamers Lore with Idiots here on the RSG channel. We record this every Sunday and get it out to the masses every Friday of the same week, except unless you're a Patreon VIP, then you get it the day after, because that's one of the benefits of being a Patreon. If you like the content that we're putting out, feel free to go to Reality Skewed Gamers at Patreon. It's in the description of the video, and you can help support the channel. $5 a month or more, you get VIP status with all the other bells and whistles for each VIP level, and you support the content that we're putting out, like the lore video and all the other stuff that we're doing. So yes, if you'd like to do that, please do. It allows us to do things like we are doing right now with Podbeam and Amazon, where you can download this as a podcast and listen to it whenever you want. When we get done with this episode today, I'm going to be uploading the latest episodes onto those channels. I'm a little behind on those, but I think we got up through 9 or 10 on those, so we're just 1 or 2 behind, so I'll get that done. So yes, but that being said, this is a show where I try to teach a bunch of idiots lore in the Star Wars universe, and it usually goes hanky. That's the word I'm using today is hanky. It's very hanky action going on right here. That being said, we all like to drink on this, not because it's social or anything like that. It's because these guys drive me to drink, and I'm drinking some Jim Beam as tradition. Let's see what the rest of the idiots are up to. We'll start with Karth. Karth, usually you got some coffee going on there, but is there anything magical or special in the coffee?
Yes. Oh. There are some Baileys and Kahlua.
Oh, very nice. Karth knows this is going to be one of them days. Ram, who doesn't know how to tell time, anything special you're drinking today? We did drink a lot. I got revenge on Ram between him and Heinze. I still owe Heinze. I'm going to get his ass next time. I didn't have enough time, but I did get Ram's ass on my show last Friday. Ram, anything special you're drinking today? Or are you being
late? No, I'm all drinked out because I need to run to the store, and like you said, you mentioned time, and I forgot that we were doing this, so I did not go to the store.
As is tradition. And last but not least, someone who has a fine quality liqueur of some sort, bourbon, whiskey, or otherwise, we've got Mr. K. Big K's joining us.
I usually like to go with a nice bourbon, but today I'm going with something, ruining some of my street cred, little cred I have. I'm going with a watermelon mint mojito.
Hey, that's nothing wrong with that either, man. That's a really good choice. I like that. You know, whatever you're in the mood for, you don't have to just stick with bourbon or whiskey. You can go with whatever floats your boat. Yeah. So, all right. Now, as is tradition, I usually allow the morons here to try to guess what the subject is, because that's what they like to do, even though I don't give them a clue or anything. So I'll leave it to them this time. Do you want the quote, or do you want to try to guess before I give you the quote and then try to guess afterward? Usually they both go wrong, but whichever one you guys want to try first here.
Start with the quote.
You want to start with the quote? Okay, we have one for the quote. Ram, Kay, you want to start with the quote?
Start with the quote.
I think this week you guys are going to get it, because if not, I'm going to be mildly upset with you. all right, pressure. Here's your quote. I just know what you get. It says, I only know of this weapon what you taught me. Be honest, it means nothing to me or my people, nor does station or bloodline. What means more to me is honor, loyalty, character. These are the reasons I serve you. Okay, that's your quote. Let that marinate for a second in their pea-sized brains. And Kay, what do you think?
I can't answer.
Yeah, you can.
I mean, I know the answer, so I'm going to give them the...
Oh, well, I think we all know the answer. Rand, what do you think? Who are we discussing this week?
I'm trying to think.
Give me an...
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to go out on a limb.
If you say anything Mace-related, I'm going to straight up just kick you right out the Zoom call. In fact, I don't want Ram to answer. Karth, what do you think?
Well,
he already made the face. I already knew Ram was coming up with some stupid nonsense with Mace, and I
want to say it's something Mando related, but I feel like we
covered the Mandalorians. We covered their culture and stuff. So you're in the right ballpark.
Are we talking about a specific character that's a Mandalorian?
Yes, a specific character. Yes.
Oh, please say it's Candorous.
No, actually, it's not Candorous.
Damn it.
Candy Manspieler, no.
Is it Jango Fett?
No. And I knew you were going to do that. So, all right, Kay, give the answer. I know you know what this is.
Din Djarin.
No, it's Bo-Katan.
Oh, he's Boca the one trash. That said it, though.
Yeah, I know. He's the one that said it to her. That's why I left the Lady Crease part out, because then you guys would have really gotten it. So yeah, I was trying to see if I could.
Damn it.
Yes. Today, we're going to be covering Bo-Katan. I figured that this was a perfect time to cover her character because we just had Mando Season 3 wrap up. And this is mainly her story. And I figured, why don't we cover a little bit of Bo-Katan and for the peeps out there and see what the idiots know. They should know most of this stuff. Some of it they may not know. I know, you're probably being some of the dark on some of her history and stuff. But I think Ram, Karth, you guys are pretty well versed. I mean, I'm speaking for you, Big K, but you guys, how do you knowledge of Bo-Katan overall?
If it's in the shows, I know it. If it's in like reading with words,
most of her canon is the shows.
If you don't have pictures, I ain't interested.
Yeah, exactly.
Read them symbols. I ain't down for this crap.
Yeah, and I certainly would not mind a picture book of hers.
Yeah.
No.
I mean.
No.
Star Wars related or not?
Yeah, listen.
I'm very.
I don't want it Disney related. Let me make that clear. The book I want on her is not Disney appropriate.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm very peculiar and very very well versed in the realm of Katie Sackhoff.
Yes, how can you not be? And we'll discuss outside of the lore, like the origins of the character and where you can see her at. Briefly, you know, we'll cover. Of course, we all know she's played by Katie Sackhoff. I'll remind everybody of that later on when I get that. Perfect person.
Shut up the camera, please.
And it's awesome that, she was the original voice actor on the actual character and that it allowed her to transition perfectly into actually playing her on screen.
Well, I think that was a nice thing that they did in Clone Wars, though, is that a lot of the people that weren't established characters, they modeled them after the voice actors who played them.
Yeah. They did a really good
job. I think
really
that was kind of like a contingency plan.
Yeah. So let's get into it, shall we? Bo-Katan, yes. So let's start with, as always, I'll do some lore. Now, most of the lore I get from is from books. This one is mainly from Wikipedia. And really, I'm just reading it verbatim for them. It just makes my job easier. Sometimes in lore series, especially with the legend stuff, I have to pull outside of this. But this is all canon. So we did Ahsoka last week. We're doing Bo this week. They're mainly almost all canon. Which is really nice. So I can just pull from Wikipedia and other sources and just be like, here you go. It's from the shows, you're not missing much here. But for those that haven't seen the shows and stuff, it'll give you a nice little introduction to the character. Again, just the general stuff. I'm not getting into the minutiae of details with any of this stuff. If you want to get the minutiae of details, go watch the shows. Go read Wikipedia. Go read the source material. There's a ton of it out there. And Wikipedia does a really good job of tagging the source from where the person or people pull the information from when they write these things, go and look at specifically for this information. So yeah, but next week is going to be a lot of, just warn you guys, it's going to be a lot of legends material, a buttload. So Bo-Katan Kryse was a Mandalorian human female princess born to the House Kryse that during her childhood served as the royal family of Mandalore. Kryse was the sister of Satine Kryse, who affectionately nicknamed her Bo. They also had a nephew named Corki Kryse, with whom Satine was very close. She grew up flying the hills of the planet Kelavela, the homeworld of her house. Bo inherited a set of Mandalorian armor that had been passed down through several generations of their family. So if you see the armor, we'll break down her gear and armor later, but that is a family set of armor. And most families of that ilk had armor that they would pass down through the generations. And we also know from our previous Mandalore episode that it doesn't matter whether you're man or women, it's just based off position, age, stuff like that. At some point during her childhood, she took the Mandalorian creed, By performing a Mandalorian initiation ritual in the living waters in the mines of Mandalore in front of her father and the subjects of the Mandalorian royal family. She was showered with gifts and made her father proud. Priests considered the ritual as just theater for their subjects and part of the stories for children. She also believed that there was nothing magic about the living waters. Now, that being said, we know in this recent episode of Mandalore, or in this season of Mandalorian, that got flipped on its head big time. Because she had, what would you say, an awakening when she saw the
Mythosaur?
Yeah, when she saw the Mythosaur and it looked back at her, acknowledging her in some sort of way that kind of made her rethink everything that she, you know, kind of didn't, you know, as far as she was concerned, they were just nice stories. Remember in the scene, episode, I think it's episode 2 or 3, where she's reading the plaque that tells a story of the first Mandalore and the Mythosaur, and she's like, hey, yeah. I didn't, you know, you take the creed. She's basically looking at Din and saying, you take this creed stuff seriously. I don't walk. You know, so it's really interesting that they focused on that as part of her overall story arc. Her father died defending Mandalore, and Satine, her sister, eventually became the Duchess of Mandalore, leading the pacifists of the new Mandalorians. And they covered, this gets into the Clone Wars stuff. Now, we all know that Satine had a relationship with Obi-Wan Kenobi, but relationship between Bo and her sister was skewed, because we'll get into it. Over her life, she became a lieutenant in the Death Watch terrorist group, the commanding officer of its Night Owl subdivision, and the leader of the Mandalorian resistance, and even the Mandalore who laid claim over all of her homeworld, the planet Mandalore. Her complicated history was tied to that of her sister, Satine, as we previously mentioned, who ruled as the Duchess of Mandalore, but advocated the pacifist teachings, which brought the two siblings into conflict. Bo believed that Mandalore should take pride in its martial history and thus immediately joined Death Watch, a splinter group of those who believed in Mandalore's warrior past and opposed the new pacifist government. After Governor Pre Vizsla of the Concordia was publicly exposed as leader of the Death Watch, the splinter group was exiled from the Mandalorian system. This leads us into, again, Clone Wars stuff. In 19 BBY, before the Battle of Yavin, Bo and Vizsla discovered the Sith Lords Maul and Savage Opress. With the Sith, they plotted to reclaim Mandalore, and through Maul's planning, united several crime syndicates to form the Shadow Collective, launching a takeover Mandalore, and Satine's rule was overthrown, and Vizsla took control of the. All right, questions so far. Does this all sound familiar to you guys? Any comments from the peanut gallery? Let's see how the idiots are doing right now. The blanks dare say a lot.
I mean, it's all kind of. I always coming back
to you. Starting to come back to you.
It's the history between the sisters. I always find interesting because it's kind of like. Through the large scope of the story that we have available to us now, it's kind of like Bo's coming back to like the way that her sister was thinking, to a degree, not verbatim.
They just had a different view. I mean, the history, I think what's interesting about them, they both grew up and understood the history. Satine took it in a certain way, right? And the pacifist side of it and the history of and really honor that, but Bo took the more warrior side of it, the history of the more warrior side, and believed that that was the path that Mandalore should take.
Well, yeah, and so I guess the better way of saying that is that they both realized. So I think Bo took a longer time realizing Satine's main issue with the Mandalorian culture, which was the infighting, that they were responsible for spilling the majority of their own blood, which is why Satine went the hard route of pacifism, of just get rid of all of it and then we won't have to worry about this, which, you know, only created more problems. So I think it's gonna be interesting to see what Bo decides to do with that, because she's got the same mindset now of like, this is a problem, we can't have this, but, you know, it's also part of a warrior's culture, so it's like, how do you balance it? So it's interesting.
Yeah,
I like to see it.
Garth, Ram, anything, any thoughts so far? Okay.
No, I love Bo-Katan's history.
Yeah, it's really good.
Such a good character.
Yeah, such a good character and such a good story arc. Now, this leads us into Maul challenged Pre Vizsla at this time, and the Sith Lord defeated him. Thus, as we talked about in the previous Mandalore episode, he took the throne because he has a Darksaber, and he appointed a kind of a puppet Prime Minister, Alamek, leader, ushering in the post-Vizsla era. Bo and a group of Mandalorian loyalists refused to recognize Maul's rule, and they liberated Satine from the royal prison. Contacting, of course, who else? Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi for help. Due to Mandalore's neutrality, though, Kenobi was forced to come alone, and he was captured by Maul, who then killed Satine. When Kenobi was brought to the prison, Bo and her rebels freed the Jedi. Mandalore was swept into a civil war as Maul's forces fought to reclaim him. Before he left the planet, Kenobi requested that Bo, that the Galactic Republic be informed of the events, hoped that a Republic invasion would result in death. Less than a year later, Bo's desire was fulfilled, and the Republic laid siege to Mandalore, driving Maul from the planet. That's not true. This is where you get to season 7 of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So you see Bo gets Ahsoka and them get with Anakin and Kenobi. We talked about this in the Ahsoka episode, and then they go after Maul. They actually capture Maul. After this point, though, after all the events, they capture Maul, everything happens with Order 66, right? Now Bo then became Lady of the House of Kryze, and then now became the Regent of Mandalore. However, she lost her position when she refused to follow the newly appointed Galactic Emperor Palpatine, and Clan Saxon took over. Now, during the ensuing occupation of Mandalore, the Republic reorganized into the Galactic Empire, the safe and secure. And a new wave of violence claimed the planet. This gets into 2BBY. Clan Ren of Cronus chose to resist the Empire, leading the Imperial Loyalists of Clan Saxon to fight them. These actions threw Mandalore into another civil war. You heard it here first. And then during this war... During this war, Bo encountered Countess Ursa Ren and Sabine Ren of Clan Ren, who were seeking a Mandalorian worthy of wielding the Darksaber and claim the title of Mandalore. With the Ren's approval, she took the weapon and rallied the support of several Mandalorian clans, uniting them to fight against the Empire. However, her support was not universal, as she had accepted the Darksaber as a gift instead of winning it in combat. Her rule proved to be short-lived when the Empire managed to lay waste to Mandalore and his people in the Night of a Thousand Tears. Again, covered in depth in this season of The Mandalorian. With Bo additionally losing the Darksaber to Moth Gideon, which she gave to him as a part of her surrender. But that didn't matter, because Moth Gideon's a piece of shit, and in the aftermath, what came to be known as the Great Purge, Bo had to reformulate a plan to reclaim the web from Moth and return to Mandalorian. And that was covered in the season of Mandalorian, which we didn't really know. We'd always been wondering, like, how did Gideon get the Darksaber? Well, now we know. After the Night of a Thousand Tears, Bo basically said, I didn't have a choice. I was in a bad position. It's either surrender or we're going to get wiped out. So she did. She gave it the Darksaber to Moff Gideon, who then wiped out the planet anyway.
Yeah.
And this leads to her with her quest to go get the Darksaber.
Empire's going to do what the Empire is going to do.
Yes.
Alter the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Pray to alter it further.
So, yeah. It's interesting, this time in Mandalorian culture and history. We've covered the Mandalorian history not only through, you know, them as a group, as a society, and where they come from, their origins. Normally, the Mandalorians, when they're fighting other people, they're united. They're like, if you're not Mandalorian, we're gonna fight you no matter what. This is kind of the first time that, whether they picked the right side or bad side, didn't matter. Once the call was made and the leader was formed, the Mandalorians flocked to that banner and would fight. We saw that with Exar Kun. We saw that with Darth, when the great Mandalorian wars against Revan and the Galactic Republic and other places. This is the first time that you had factions within the factions fighting on opposite sides. And so it was really interesting to see in this time period of Mandalore, when a leader was formed or when there was a common enemy, half of them would be like, yeah, the Empire is great. And the other half's like, no, the Empire sucks, you know, and they would fight each other more than they would fight the Empire.
Well, that was that's a common theme throughout a lot of it. They, because I know SWTOR goes back and tries to develop that further in their time frame with the newest content. They try to develop a little bit more of the infighting of things. But the, I mean, yeah, whenever they're a united front, they are forced to be reckoned with, mostly because their exclusive grip on Beskar armor and weapons and stuff like that, it makes them an incredibly lethal fighting force. Mm-hmm. And so they always try to be careful. I mean, I think that was part of Palpatine's thing, was to constantly have them at odds with each other, because then they could never rally and fight against him, because, you know, he couldn't capture Mandalore if they were aggressed against or attacked, they would have just repelled it. But as long as you let them just fight themselves, because
had happened and the Empire had fought them, even if the Empire had won, they would have taken severe heavy losses.
Well, because that's part of what they do in Rebels, right? They talk about the Empire like using Saxon as a ploy to gain access to Beskar to develop weapons to outright kill them, right? Yeah. And so they had a real big point of contention against them. So it's always interesting to see that they are always kept in civil war basically from the end of the Republic until the end of the Empire.
Yeah. And even then, I mean, and what I appreciate about this season of Mandalorian, and again, we're getting into the spoilers, but, you know, if you haven't watched it till this point, then I'll tell you. they show the difference between the Imperial troopers and the I'll call them Beskar troopers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had it, but you can see the way the Mandalorians fought. They had grown up with it. They knew how to use it. Plus, they knew how to use the weapons better. That even though there was more of the troopers, the Imperial troopers, you know, the Beskar troopers, they were no match for the Mandalorians. I mean, armor was going around with a hammer and shit, just beating their ass, dude. It was fantastic. But I think the best one is when Koska Reeves does that move where she's flying and she uses the ground. She slides against the ground, flips, turns, uses her knee rockets to take out two of them, you know, because, you know, she lets gravity take, you know, use her momentum to get into a position where she could.
Was that Koska? I thought that was Bo-Katan.
No, that was Koska that did that. Okay. Move. Yeah. So,
Sasha Banks is a badass.
Yes. And her character is dope as hell, too. So, yeah. But I really appreciated the subtle variety of seeing the Mandalorians, what makes them such a unique fighting force.
Well, they did a lot of that too throughout the season as well. I don't know if you paid attention to it, but like every time Din is using his backpack,
yeah,
he's clumsy as a mother. But, you know, every, like, you see Bo-Katan and Vizsla, you know, it's graceful landings.
Axe, yeah,
it's all well, you know, like coordinated. And then, you know, it's like Din just comes coming in hot and just like fumbles on the ground trying to re-get himself. And so I think that was a lot of it, was just showing, like, part of it is just the use of the technology, and the other part is just the experience of what it is.
Yeah, Din showed, though, when he fought, you know, and when he's going down that corridor, and you can tell the subtle differences of the way he moved and where to attack versus the troopers. Troopers were using standard moves and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. they had the weapons, but he knew where to hit them and how to hit them. And where to attack the weak points of the armor, and they were struggling to do that.
Yeah, well, that goes to show a lot of what he learned throughout the season, because there is a bit of time between seasons, and so he's had a lot more exposure to the culture and the people.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot more going on in the background that kind of gets glossed over by 45 minutes of runtime.
Yeah. So now let's continue on, because now we're going to get into The Mandalorian. This is all the stuff that I just talked about is Clone Wars and leading up to Mandalorian. Season 2. So on Trask, Bo joined fellow Mandalorians Axe Wolves and Koska Reeves to hijack a shipment of weapons aboard an Imperial Gazanti class cruiser. Before assaulting the transport, however, Bo, Wolves, and Reeves rescued an unknown member of the Children of the Watch, Din Djarin, and poor sensitive youngling Grogu from a fishing boat. With Djarin's help, they successfully managed to steal the weapons and capture the cruiser. They were being transported in Flaming Mandalore. Later, D'Jarin recruited Bo and Reese to help the rescue of Grogu, who had been captured by Moff Gideon and was being held aboard his light cruiser. With the help of Reeves, the assassin Fennec Shand, Marshal Dune, and former bounty hunter Boba Fett, Boba successfully captured the light cruiser's bridge. Although the victory secured control over the light cruiser, D'Jarin returned with a rescued Grogu and Gideon in his stun cuffs, having accidentally claimed the Darksaber by defeating Gideon, thereby making him the rightful ruler of Mandalore. Boba refused to take the Darksaber from D'Jarin despite having him willingly relinquish it for having grown fearful due to her past. And then we get into this season of Mandalorian. And we see Bo in the beginning of this season. She's withdrawn. She's done. Like, and I love the way they show that. She's at her home planet. She's in her castle. And she's like, I don't care anymore, you know? And I like the arc that they lead her through this season of her kind of getting over that. You know, because Bo's been through a lot. She's lost a lot. And we learn a little bit more that we didn't know in this season with the, you know, learning more about what her role in was in surrender and everything like that of her journey. And I think they did a really good job of this season. Really her character arc of going through the trials and tribulations to kind of go, as you said, Karth, full circle back to becoming the leader. And realizing it's not the Darksaber, you know, that great quote I gave in the beginning is Jin telling her that we don't give a shit about the Darksaber. We follow you because you're a good leader and because you're honorable and your character and everything like that. That's why we're here. And I'll always follow you as long as you maintain those things. And to see her now become the leader that she was meant to be. Mandalore, it's really interesting. I wonder where they're going to take her story, but yeah, this is just in a nutshell her history. And if you've seen Mando season 3, you can kind of wrap it up yourself. I'll leave it to the idiots here. What are your thoughts on the Bo's entire story, you know, and especially this season of Mandalorian season 3?
I loved how her story was this year. Like, yeah, you know, like we've discussed, this season was almost like the Bo season. I think she did a great job. They did a great job kind of just going over her overall story. You know, one thing I wish they did do is kind of, I don't understand why they didn't do it, because they don't want this to be a show where you've had to have seen Rebels and you had to have seen Clone Wars, but kind of like her, like, you know, with her sister kind of like being like,
talking about that. Yeah.
You know, that would have been cool as a nice little nod, but otherwise, you know.
Well, she did talk about her family, and she talked about, you know.
Mostly her father, and he was proud of her, and
all
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're trying to be careful about introducing stuff back from the Clone Wars era into the current stuff, because they need to make sure that they have a flight path for it before they do.
Yeah.
And I think a large part of that comes just from the turmoil that Lucasfilm and Disney have had over the last year about starting projects and then shelving them. And so they don't want to introduce something and then have it go to hell in a handbasket. Yeah. You know, it's like, why tease a character coming back and then never write that story?
Yeah.
So I think that they did a fairly good job with her story. It's like the love hate I have with Mando. I almost wish it was like another 8 episodes per season, because I'd kind of wish there was a little bit more.
I wish it would have been 12. Yeah. And really flush out a lot of the history and really get into these factions and their animosity. And they show a little bit here and there. There's a great scene between Axe and, you know, Pre Vizsla, you know, with the game and stuff. And then of course Grogu comes in with the no. But I would say
overall,
the story of Bo this season and the Mandalorian culture was really highlighted here, and I really appreciated it the most about this season of Mandalore. And Ram, what are your thoughts so far
on Mando season 3?
Well, just the Bo and the character
and Bo in season 3,
or just her overall story and stuff, man.
I mean, no, I love the character of Bo. I love, obviously, love Katie Sackhoff. When season 3 started, I was on board with the idea of This is not The Mandalorian as far as The Mandalorian, but this is The Mandalorian as in a... It didn't relate to just Din Djarin. It could be Bo-Katan in this case. So I really liked that idea of having Bo-Katan be front and center, because I think she deserved it. That being said, I think the writing lacked a lot in this season, but that's beside the point. Her character arc was pretty awesome. I think she had a good character arc. You know, love or hate some of the decisions that were made in the season. I mean, it's just, I'm excited to see what she can do in season four. Now that we know there's a season four coming, I'm excited to see what she's going to be able to do now that she's gotten everybody back on Mandalore. They have the Great Forge up and running. Darksaber's destroyed. They're united, but the Darksaber's destroyed. But as something may have been pointed out, if the crystal wasn't destroyed, the Darksaber can be rebuilt into a new hilt.
Yeah.
And it was created by Mandalorians in the first place. So it first doesn't have Jedi. To be right. So it doesn't have to be a complete opposite of the Darksaber. I think Filoni actually discussed that at some point in time too, where it gives him the capability of designing a new Darksaber. So,
And I think she's realized, and she even says it to Moff Gideon, we're stronger together, you know, than he's talking about their trinkets and stuff that he destroyed the Darksaber. And she's like, no, we're stronger together. She gets it now, you know, that it's all right to have your differences of opinion on, like, you know, between the Children of the Watch and her forces and stuff. But that the common theme is we're Mandalorians. However you want to be a Mandalorian is cool. We just need to be united in our efforts to fight. And we know, I think the Mandalorians are going to be a big part moving forward as they start bringing the planet back and their culture back and everybody starts flocking there. They also have a home in Navarro now, as was made evidence with Grief saying, yeah, you guys have this. This is all for you. So they're going to have bases now and stuff that they can operate from too. So it's going to be really interesting to see with what we know, Thrawn's coming back, that, you know, the Mandalorians are going to be involved in a big way fighting him.
Oh, yeah.
They despise the Empire.
There's no way that the Mandalorians don't make an appearance in the Ahsoka series. There's just no way. They will absolutely be in there.
I'm interested to see how Sabine starts tying all this in with her Mandalorian past, because she's from House Ren, you know? So let's see, you know, and we don't know what happened to her mother. We just know... But we'll see what they say with her story arc, you know, how she ties in with the Mandalorians. And that's going to be an interesting dynamic I see play out, and I'm hoping, in the Ahsoka series. So I'm excited. So let's move on.
And I'm hoping that they do something with the Mythosaur too. Like they've established that the Mythosaur is laying in the waters dormant. And like he opened his eyes twice, right?
One for Bo and one for Grogu. And I was sitting there going, now that's some foreshadowing right there. You know, I was like,
if we get like Bo riding the Mythosaur,
with Grogu sitting there going,
somebody's riding the Mythosaur. It's just when and who.
Yes.
Well, there's a degree of that you have to be a little bit careful on when it comes to the lore of that, because it's.
I think it's just the acknowledgement that the Mythosaur is looking at those two going,
oh yeah, no, that's for sure. It's just for me, it's like they're boxing themselves in to a degree, right? Because we only have a certain window of time before the First Order comes over and starts messing things up.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm all for the Mandalorians getting established and doing their thing and becoming a more unified people. But it's like, I don't want them to be so like OP where it's like, why wouldn't they just throw them back into chaos or take them out or blow up their planet or whatever else? I mean, it's a lot of things like that. But I mean, that's off the subject of where we're at. But I mean, I think for the most part, it's going to be interesting to see how they push the rest of the stories moving forward. I kind of want Mando to go back a little bit to the season one vibes of
what's they're doing,
pushing back to being a bounty hunter and doing, you know, well, he's a part of things, but he's not
Yeah.
It's not going to be driving his main objectives.
Well,
I think
what they said at the end there, he's going to be a bounty hunter going after Imperial Remnant targets and things of that nature for the New Republic, and that'll get into the story of the Imperial Remnant and stuff as he learns things and goes after targets, and yeah, so they'll tie it in that way. But he's going to be doing his, you know, teaching Grogu, you know, so, you know, he's now in an apprentice.
Probably regretting giving up that Beskar spear.
No, I don't think so. Grogu's wearing it, so, I mean, you know. Okay, let's talk about some two things I want to cover with Bo. Three more things. Real quick, her skills and equipment. Well, two. We'll put in two. Her skills and equipment, and then just a background of the character itself outside of, you know, in Star Wars, but, you know, where it first appeared, she first appeared and things of that nature. So, a former lieutenant in the Death Watch, Bo was a fierce and deadly Mandalorian warrior, extremely skilled in hand-to-hand combat. We've seen that. Jetpack maneuvers, we've seen that. And marksmanship, we've seen that. And ranged weaponry. During her rescue of Obi-Wan, for instance, on Mandalore, she was able to single-handedly defeat multiple Mandalorian fighters at once using their own weapons against him. She was also able to hold her ground against formidable force-sensitive opponents such as Ahsoka Tano. During the Siege of Mandalore, she quickly dispatched multiple Maul's Mandalorian super commandos in quick succession in an effort to subdue Almec. With her skill set, Bo led the Night Owls, a group of Mandalorian warriors within Death Watch. After the Siege of Mandalore, Bo remarked to Tano that she wished she was good at something besides war. She was a very capable leader, but after her past failures, was reluctant to attempt to lead again against despite insistence of Sabine Wren. We saw that all play out from that in Rebels, and then what we saw in this season of Mandalorian. Her main equipment, we already talked about her armor, is armor that's been passed down in her family for three generations. So she, if you've not seen her, this is your first time hearing about her, she was a member of the Night Owls, and here she wore a blue, what would you say, light blue? What kind of color? It's a blue, but it's a lighter blue, and white Mandalorian armor. Mm-hmm. And of course, with that set, she had the Mandalorian van braces. She had her JT-12, and also, or as you know it, as a Z6 jetpack that she used in combat. She dual wielded Westar 35 blaster pistols. She also had a wrist blaster. She had dart launchers, gauntlet blades. She also had a whipcord launcher and a combat shield, which we saw all that play out this year. And then when she had it, she had the Darksaber. And you can tell that she's had a lot of use in training in the Darksaber, because she's one of the only ones that I saw ever, you know, that mastered it. Even Sabine had problems with it, and she was being trained by Kanan. But Bo is the one that had spent the most time with it, knew how to use it, and we saw that this year more than anything with her being able to control the blade and everything. So where does Bo come from? So Bo first appeared in A Friend in Need, the 14th episode in the fourth season of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, which is the animated television series, if you don't know. In that episode, which first aired in, can you believe this, January 13, 2012, over 10 years ago, she was a minor character, and she was a voice, and of course she's voiced by the lovely, the very wonderful Katie Sackhoff, aka Starbuck, aka lots of other roles. Which is interesting, she was not included in the original script for the episode, but Dave Filoni added her in, having plans for the character in the Clone Wars fifth season. The name Bo Katan was created by Filoni as a nod to his wife's cat. Filoni's wife, Anne Convery, calls her cat Boogie, and Bo derived Bo-Katan from Boogie Cat Anne. Filoni also wrote Bo to have a unique helmet design, so he created a look based on a barn owl. For A Friend in Need, Bo's character sketch was finalized by Darren Marshall. Now, following the season 5 episode, The Lawless, Bo was set to return in the Clone Wars finale. However, the show was canceled in 2013, and the episode remained unfinished until the show's revival in 2020. This is season 7 that came back. In 2016, Sackhoff revealed that Bo would return to television in the animated series in Star Wars Rebels. At Celebration Orlando, Filoni finally confirmed that Bo would appear in the fourth and final season of Rebels. And then, of course, it was announced in 2018 that we'd get the 12 episodes, season 7 of The Clone Wars, which would feature Bo significantly in the Siege of Mandalore. And then we get, you know, Katie Sackhoff later would portray Bo in the live-action Chapter 11 The Mandalorian, a role she teased in a tweet posted a year prior to the release of the episode. In November 2020, Sackhoff's stunt double for the character was Caitlin Dichelle. She needs to get credit for the live action stuff. And then, of course, we have all the stuff that happened in season. We had her appearances in season two, and then season three. Bo became the show's, in this season, the show's co-lead. And then the official Japanese Star Wars Twitter account also teased that a past connection between Jin and Kreese would be revealed, but no such twist was prevented in season three. I think they're waiting on that. There's something going on there. I don't know if you guys picked on it with their relationship and stuff. They have a connection of some sort. I don't know what it is, but they have a really strong connection and relationship. And I don't think they revealed it in this season, but I kind of got that sense, their friendship and stuff. But there's a deeper connection there. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of reveal that they're going to have between...
Between who and who?
Bo and Din.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... I think there's got to be something there because she, like, listens to him, which is, you know, kind of not her style.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something there that has... It's either the origin story of Din that she relates with, that he's so committed to the Mandalorians, even though he's not even born of Mandalorian blood, or something. But there's something there. I couldn't tell you what it is.
I don't know yet, but it's going to be interesting to see anything does transpire from it. But they've laid some groundwork for that to be a possibility. Because remember, Bo fought heavily in the Clone Wars, and so did the Mandalorians. And Din was just a child and was saved by the Children of the Watch, but that doesn't mean that there's some kind of connection there somehow, between Bo and Din that we just don't know about, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. So that's a little brief little history of the character, her appearances. She's a beloved character. I mean, Katie Sackhoff is a perfect person to play her. She always has. I've always loved her voice work in all these episodes of Clone Wars, Rebels, and so forth and so on. And I'm just really glad to see, kind of like Ahsoka, you know, another strong, powerful female character that we've grown to know. God, 10 years. It's been over 10 years we've had Bo-Katan. And she's one of my favorites. She's a fan favorite. She looks cool. She's badass. Katie Sackhoff plays her. I mean, Jesus Christ, what more do you want? Yeah, I mean, Jesus. So we'll go around the corn here, as Grande would say, and get our final thoughts here. Kaz, your final thoughts on Bo-Katan?
Well, I was going to say, I think the connection is that every time she takes off within, every time she takes off the helmet, you hear a ding on the inside of his Beskar armor. But otherwise, I think she's a great character. I'm really glad the direction they're going in with her, and I do hope to see story-wise more with her.
So what you're saying is his saber's igniting, but it isn't the dark saber.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Hold on, hanky. I somehow used that word.
We're being very hanky today. Yes.
What was the waters of Mandalore? What was that called? It was like the
pools, pools of Mandalore. The pools of Mandalore. Yeah.
I don't know if it was just me. But, I mean, I don't know if it was the pools of Mandalore or if she was just naturally that wet.
Oh, my God.
Ram, shame on you, hanky. Karth, before I get to Ram so he can redeem himself, your final thoughts on Bo? How much, like, what do you think of the character? I know you like her, but, I mean, in your list of Star Wars characters, where does Bo fall for you?
I mean, it's a weird part because, like, you know, she's not a part of what you'd consider to be like the standard character lineup, because you know so much of the original story focuses on a much more prominent subgroup of characters, but I do like these stories that come in and explain a lot more of what's going on, because like when you first meet Bo, you don't like her very much. Mm-mm. Because she's in opposition to the main characters a lot of the time.
Yeah.
until she saves Kenobi at the end of it, and even that is, you know, more or less because she's in spite of Maul, not because she really, really wants to help the Republic. You know, and so you don't really get to like the character until you get to Rebels, where she kind of starts fighting in opposition to what's been going on. And then you know, after that, she kind of becomes a little bit more endearing because you can see more of her struggle. I think that's always the problem with getting characters at a snippet and you have to wait a long time to get their story revealed, is that you don't fully realize who to done what. So I like the character. You know, she's not going to be on the top favorites of anything, just because I don't have enough exposure to really you know, move her up the ladders. But yeah, you know, there's a long list of Star Wars characters that I enjoy. But I think out of like the non Jedi characters or Sith characters, you know, she's going to be in that top 10 list because she's just, you know, she's really good. She's a badass at what she does, but you know, she's just, even to this point, as much as we've had with her, I think she just needs more time to develop and actually become a more endearing character.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Ram, your final thoughts?
No, I love Bo-Katan. I'm interested to see where they go in season 4. Who takes over? Does she take over the throne? Because
yeah, I think so.
Technically, she was the last rightful owner of the Darksaber, and if they build another one, she's still the rightful owner.
Yeah.
In the bloodline, obviously, she's the royal house. I think her and Armor have some stuff going on too. I think she knows more about the Armor than she's letting on.
Yeah, they kind of hinted about that Death Watch is no more in the season or the episode 7. They were, you know,
yeah,
when Armor made that little slip there, I was like, were you a part of Death Watch there?
I mean, yeah, of course.
Well, you have to think. Yeah, look at her helmet. Her helmet has the horns, which is a signet of Death Watch. And then obviously, well, Bo-Katan coming from a subsect of Death Watch.
It was a signatory of Death Watch. It was a signatory of when Gar Saxon or when Maul took over. That's a big part of when that one came into prominence. It was a big one when Gar Saxon took over up until his defeat in Rebel, or I think Rebels, they did redo it, but
she's a very interesting character, but I think her relationship with Bo is that she's that sage counselor that Bo needs, you know, and that's what the Armor's always been. You know, Armor's a badass when she needs to fight, but she's more there to teach the next generation and to counsel and to, you know, let the others grow. She's the senpai, you know, to Bo, but she respects Bo. Yeah, she really is. I mean, she has that kind of relationship, Kohai senpai.
But if you think about it, like, something's being hidden about Armor.
Yeah, we don't have enough about her. I mean,
we don't have a name. She's the only character that we don't have a name.
It's the Armor, yeah.
It's the Armor, right?
I'd love to learn more. I mean, eventually I would love to do one on her, but we just don't have enough information on the Armor to really get into anything on her. I mean, she's a very mysterious character in that regard. Who was she before? I mean, she's just called the Armor, but there's a hell of a lot more to her character than just the Armor. And she knows a lot. You know, she knows a lot more than just running this convert that, you know, that she's a part of. She knows a hell of a lot for someone that, you know, supposed to be on the outskirts as the child of the watch and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see, but yeah. So let us know in the comments.
I love Bo-Katan. I'm excited to see where her story goes. I think she's a phenomenal character, and I hope someday I get to meet Katie Sackhoff. Katie tricked me off. I mean, what?
You ever watched, I highly recommend it. She's on Christian Harloff's podcast a lot, and I just like watching her interview and their relationships. They go way back. I mean, they go back 15, 20 years when he was just first starting, and she would come on the podcast just for fun because she liked it after she got done with Battlestar. It was really cool to see those two, and I always love when she's on there. And they just gave away a signed helmet that she did for a fan, and then I think is it Heinz?
He's going to be in Colorado.
Yeah, Heinz is going to get he's going to get his, you know, helmet signed.
Get his helmet signed, yeah. I loved when she was at Stellar Celebration and she got up there and then she was just like,
what I really appreciate,
her little pose.
What's really great about these actors that do all these projects, they're such fans of the show and the fans, that when you see them doing signings, they commit the time and effort to the fans, and you can see that kind of relationship. And it's good to see that Ahmed Best and Hayden Christensen and all these people, you know, whether you like the shows or not, if you think they're good or bad, you still love the characters. you know, and you still love the people playing them, and it's good to see that it's turning around, and you know, and they appreciate the support of the fans. They really go out of their way to make them feel, you know, appreciated and you know, loved is the best way to put it. So, but let us know what you guys think of Bo-Katan. Now, next week's episode is going to be a big one because I'm going to go into something really big for these guys. I'll hint, it's going to be a faction. That's all I'm going to say. I'll let these guys...
A fraction? I'm not here for
not
that.
Not a fraction.
Yeah, yeah. Oh.
Not a bug, no. A bomb.
Weren't we talking about denominators before?
No, we never have. No, never.
Yeah, yeah.
Math is not something I will ever bring up with these guys. Yeah.
Is it the order of the stick?
Mm-hmm.
Was there a great division?
No. So anyway, let us know in the comments what you think of Bo-Katan. We appreciate your feedback and comments on all these shows. This will go up on YouTube on this week on Friday. VIPs, of course, Patreons get this early, and appreciate all their feedback and support for this as well. And I will get the other episodes uploaded to Podbeam and Amazon today. So you can, again, go download it, leave comments, leave star ratings, leave thumbs up, subscribe, all that good stuff. So with that, we'll call this one done. So on behalf of myself and the idiots, thanks for joining us for another episode of Star Wars Lore with Idiots. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time. Peace out.